Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oh, you're all very welcome back. 51551 is the text and the email is, what is it again, Oliver at RTE.ie. That's it. Now, a little bit of caution just before our next item. We'll be discussing mental health matters and include suicide as well, so in case that affects you. But our chat here will be all about helping people because PJ Gallagher is with us. Welcome, PJ Gallagher.
Yeah, morning. Thanks for having me.
Comedian, presenter, now mental health warrior. You'd be normally presenting now, wouldn't you?
I would be at this time, yeah. I'd just about finishing over and over. Right. Now, yeah.
And thanks for making the special effort to be here because you're babysitting this morning, weren't you? Your two little...
Well, yeah. I don't think you're allowed to say babysitting when they're your own kids. I've made that mistake a couple of times.
My children. God,
it's like I'm fine. I'm at that stage where not being at work is so much harder than being at work, and it's never been that case before. Like, it's just such a busy house, but it's all right.
What age are the twins?
They're not even 9 months. They're 9 months next week, It's full on. I don't know what I was thinking. You know, I'm trying to talk about doing things that's good for your mental health, and I decided to have two babies when I'm nearly 50.
That's probably the best thing that happens to a fella in their life, isn't it?
It's a great thing, but my God, it's hard. Like, it's so much moving. Like,
What are their names so we can properly judge you?
Oh, sorry, Milo is the boy and Stevie is the girl. Yeah, yeah.
So. Well, Milo is a good kind of old Dublin name in a way, isn't it?
I've heard that a few times, yeah. Yes, Milo a couple of people. Yeah, so there is a bit of an old Dublin thing to...
Golden age of acting or something in the...
A little bit, yeah, yeah. Milo O'Shea and sort of Stevie Nicks, I guess. That's what everyone says about the girl being called Stevie. But there you go, yeah. So,
have you put Bo's baby grows on them yet?
I have. Sure, it was one of the first things we did. I know that's a bit cringe, isn't it? But we did. It was,
No.
Yeah,
when it comes to Bo's people, we just have to accept that there's a... There's a madness, if I can say it.
There's a madness to it, yeah.
Bohemians.
The first day we took them out of the hospital, we took them up the Daly Mount Lane, so that'll show you.
Did you actually?
We did, yeah, because their mother runs the women's fan group, the Manana Bows group, so yeah. Like she's a lot more into it than I am even. So when they got out, the first day they were born, we watched Bows and Derry on the TV, on LOI TV, and then when they got out, it's like to get out of prison. We went straight up to Daly Mount Lane and said, this is where it'll be. So
you have a bad there for
have
sure.
a bad.
But
yeah.
That's how you met your Mrs. Mother of your children?
Yeah, through the club, through Bohemians, yeah.
I forgot that we had to mention there was a mother.
There is a mother. This is driving her mad as well because everywhere we go, because people kind of know my face, it's everywhere and it's happening a lot. It's like, oh, well done, PJ, fair play to you. And then they say to her, will you take a picture? And she's like, oh my God. I am going to kill everyone. Like this. Yeah.
Well, we're having a cheerful conversation so far and it's good. And there is plenty of cheer in this documentary.
There is actually. I think mostly it's a documentary that's kind of has a hopeful element to it, I think.
Very much so. Yeah. So how are you? And I really mean how are you?
Yeah, thankfully very, very good. It's so nice to be able to answer that question genuinely and be able to say really, really good. And while at the same time anticipating people seeing me talk about my very, very worst. You know,
yeah, because when you talk, we tell men to talk about their mental health and if they're feeling low and whatever, you know, they're doing with their family and friends. Maybe a trusted work colleague might know, but someone like you, you're in the public limelight. Do you worry about how people view you in that way? Or?
Well, I mean, that's kind of, I think it's just, maybe it's amplified, maybe it isn't. It's very hard to know. I'm not sure if it's much different for people who are suffering. You know, with mental health or mental illness and stuff. I just think for men in particular, I've never been a woman. So it's, you know, I can only speak from my own experience. And that's the thing. I'm not an expert or a professional. So I can only tell you my story.
Very good, yeah.
And I seem to have nothing very unique to other lads. You know, when I was in trouble, I just couldn't say it. I just couldn't come out and talk about it. And when I did come out and talk about it, I wanted everyone to just keep my secret. That was the big point. I'd rather die of shame than tell people I was sick. And that's the truth. Shame was my big fear.
Yeah.
Rather than like not being alive, I was more afraid of shame. And I think a lot of men, when they're in trouble, when they're sick, that's exactly what they feel. They'd just rather not be here than be embarrassed. And it's crazy. When I talk about it in those terms now, it blows my mind that was my logic. I really felt that if I told people I was sick, I was gonna. I genuinely believed it. I'd lose my job, I'd lose my partner, I'd lose my friends. I'd create a stigma about it. It felt like I was going to my own funeral. That's kind of how I felt. You know, when you go to a funeral, you don't know what to say, so you just say sorry or, you know, I hope you're okay. If there's anything I can do, it's tokenistic. And you do it because you just don't know what else to say. And that's kind of what I thought it was going to be like. I'd say to them, people go, oh, I don't know what to do, or if you ever need that, and if you do this, and they go into the mental health conversation tropes and nothing would change. That's what I felt.
Yeah.
And the mental health conversation that was going on at the time, I felt completely excluded from, because I wasn't suffering from a little bit of depression, or I wasn't suffering from anxiety, and going for a walk and eating a salad, that wasn't going to make a difference. I had to be hospitalised and be watched 24 hours a day for a considerable number of weeks, you know, and you feel excluded from people saying, talk to your friends or do something. And
that feels glib then compared to the huge intervention.
I mean, I made the comparison to someone that you never tell someone you're struggling with your physical health. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, if you were in a big accident, you were hit by a bus and you were lying in the hospital and, you know, you don't say I'm suffering with physical health. If someone came in and says, oh, yeah, I know what you mean. I didn't go to the gym the last few weeks. It's not the same. Like, there's a health maintenance thing that's really, really important. And then there's like seriously ill, chronic, badly need intensive care to some degree. And
that's the expression you use in the documentary, that you nearly died of shame.
I did nearly die of shame. That's the truth. Yeah, that's as sort of accurate as I can portray it.
How long were you in psychiatric care?
In 12 weeks, so 3 months really, yeah. I went in just before Christmas and got out and was back on air on the 1st of March.
Back on air?
Back on air on the 1st of March. Now, they did tell me not to do that. They did say, when you leave St. Pat's Hospital, don't go straight back into going on air.
Yeah, like, any job.
But I did, that was what I wanted to do. And honestly, I was feeling very, very good. Very, very good at that point. And I've maintained that to this degree. So.
And how long ago was that?
When was it? Is it 2.5 years now? So, because I hit it. Even when I got
out. Well done, by the way. 2.5 years. That's amazing.
That's it. I'm flying, you know. And that's it. Even when I got out of St. Pat's, I still hit it. I still was involved in the lie. The cover-up was still important. Even though I felt completely good, great, getting on with my life, I was still afraid of the shame of people finding out.
Yeah.
You know, I still was going into work with Jim McCabe every day and saying, don't tell anyone, and thinking people didn't know. I disappeared off the face of the earth for 3 months and nobody said a word.
Yeah.
And then I just came back and people still didn't say a word. And neither did I. So I was complicit in the mental health cover-up
conversation. Whereas if you had an injury, that was a physical injury, as you say.
Yeah, yeah. People would be doing your head in. You know, if you come in with a cast on, you'd be sick to your teeth.
They'd be going over to sign it.
What happened? Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Whereas with a mental illness, it's like, there's no signing of the cast.
Don't know what to say. Like going to the funeral again. People just don't know what to say. And that's changed with me now. Now it's completely the other way. Now I hear everybody else's stories everywhere I go.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
And that's great. You know, people say, is that hard? No, it's not. It's great. I love it. I have no problem with that at all.
You've talked about the fact that you had good health insurance at the time, so you could get care.
Yeah. So I was very privileged. You know, essentially, I was privileged enough to have access to services that I think most people don't. And that probably saved my life, because I left it so late to get help. And that's the thing. It's early intervention is everything. I was 6 months down the road being sick before I did anything about it. And I never had to get as bad as I let it get. And that will never happen again. I'll never be that sick again, because I know not to let that happen. I know how to tackle it now. I have a toolbox I never had before. I know I have doctors to call, friends to call. I'm not ashamed of anything anymore. I know what to do. So the next time I get sick, and I will, it's recurrent depressive disorder, that's fine. I'll be in charge. It won't change my life. Mm. And that's really important.
The wounds have been healed in many ways, haven't they?
The wounds have been healed. And I know it's nothing to be afraid of now. Whereas, you know, it was such a thing to be afraid of before. So
what do people say to you when they come up? Do they come up randomly, by the way?
Randomly all the time. Yeah, randomly all the time. Most of the time it's other lads saying, you know, fair play to you, or, you know, I've had my struggles myself. Sometimes someone will tell you their whole life story. That can be a bit much, but that's good too, that they feel they can, to be honest. Sometimes it's people coming up and saying they lost family members. Sometimes it's people saying, Have you any advice for me? Which unfortunately I don't, because again, I'm not a professional, but you know, I can tell my story and say, like, some, a lot of people say there's someone in my family struggling, I don't know what to do. And if that's your case, you can get help as well. You know, you don't have to fight that battle on your own either.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard on the people around you too.
When the, when you talk about things like grief, that there's like there's a cause for the depression that might result from that. Did you look for reasons for yours? Because often there's no reason, is there?
Yeah, and that's it. And I think one of the best things I did was abandon caring why. You know, for me that was a huge thing. Is it hereditary? Is it experiential? Is it any of these things? I got to the stage, I just don't care. Mm. All that matters to me is staying well and feeling good and enjoying my life. I don't care how I got sick. It doesn't matter.
It is a bit like, as well, how did the accident happen that injured me?
Yeah, it's
exactly. You don't dwell on that too often. Do you?
Yeah, well, if you've a broken leg, you're telling the doctor about the registration of the bus that hit, it doesn't, it's not important. It's all of what's important is, you know, walking again.
Yeah. The message basically is to get men to open up, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, not just men. When I was in the hospital, it was pretty much 50-50 men and women. It was, that from my experience. So basically anyone, but I do think it's harder for lads to sit down in a formal setting. It was like, it was really, really hard for me. For me going to a counsellor felt unusual, and me just getting involved in the mental health conversation of, are you all right? You know, how are you feeling? Talk to your friends. I found that very difficult. Right. I did. What worked for me was friends coming over and saying, there's something wrong with you. And I'm going to help you. And whether you like it or not, I'll break into your house and help you if you don't want me to tell me what you want me to do. You know, it was stuff that being quite forceful in my life.
Right.
My friends of mine being able to make jokes about it to my face made me feel lighter about it. So there's no right way or no wrong way to talk about it. And I think that's important as well. You have to be able to own your own story. You have to realise that you're not going to say the wrong thing. There's nothing unique about it. Mm. You know, you can use your own words in any way you want to say these things. And it's fine. It's terrifying, but it is fine.
It's kind of embarrassing, awkward, all of those things.
All of those things.
There's an amazing moment in the documentary where you have a chat with the members of the motorbike club, and they're mostly men, aren't they, in the circle. And one of them starts talking in a way that perhaps others in the group didn't know.
Yeah, it was a very big moment for all of us in the club. We met to just see how open people would be to a mental health conversation. And
because these are people you know a long time.
People I know a long time, but people that I meet up and we talk about, you know, bikes and scooters and, you know, Vespas and we...
Men talk. About everything but the
thing. Yeah, yeah, weather and match and football and giving out about music and, you know, and then we had this day and some of the conversations that came out on that night were kind of incredible. And Andy told his story, which I think it changed the course of the documentary, really.
Yeah, it did. We have a clip of it here. Andy's in the motorbike group.
Andy, yeah, he's Keating is, yeah, he's one of the main men there. And yeah. I don't think anyone knew his story to the
just to
the degree.
To give people a setting, it's the most manly setting you could imagine, because like literally fellas in biker jackets,
in patches,
surrounded by engines.
It's all in that, yeah.
Grizzled looking fellas. This is Andy.
I have issues as well. I've been suffering for maybe 6 years now, and there's one or two people here which I have spoken to about it. It's not easy. Literally after the last episode, I went to bed. I was in bed and I got out of bed and I come downstairs and then I tried to commit suicide. And then the next day I got onto the phone to pay the house because there isn't anybody else. Like, God, I can't afford to go into a doctor every week and say, okay, 80 quid and sit there and go, how are you, blah-de-blah. Blah. For me to come over here on a whatever, if it's on a Saturday morning or whenever it is, I walk in and it's, how's it going, Andy? How are you getting on? And then I go home, smile on my face.
Extraordinary.
It was an amazing moment, it was. And Andy kept talking about it then and still has to this day. And he's opened up, and I know, like, Andy's had his battles, like, and because he did that, other people started talking. You'll see it on the night on the documentary as well. And it's an ongoing conversation now. They're all meeting on Saturday. They're all going to make a video. They're all, you know, it's just been brilliant, you know. And I think when you hear your own voice say these things, it's very encouraging, because one thing I keep saying about depression and anxiety, both of them together, like, they are the most articulate liars ever that live in your head. Mm. And it's very hard not to believe that voice, because that's the voice that practices itself and its routine in your brain over and over again to tell you how worthless you are, how pointless you are, how you can't do anything, how you'll never achieve anything. You can't argue back, because you're not experienced with arguing back. You're experienced with hearing this voice. So sometimes just hearing yourself say it makes it more manageable. Sometimes
it's more powerful than the voice in your head.
Other people saying, I've been there, I've done that.
Yeah.
Don't believe that.
Becomes familiar.
Don't believe that. And if you're listening to this now and you have that voice, or if you think those things, you hear those, you feel those feelings, I'm telling you, it's a lie. It's an absolute lie. And you can make that stop. You can stop that cycle. You really can.
There is a way.
There is a way, yeah. And it's available, you know. It is there.
When speaking of mental health struggles, you went to your doctor in the documentary, and there's a revelation for you here, wasn't there? There's a diagnosis.
Yeah, there is a revelation for me, and I'm still not sure how I feel about it. I got diagnosed with ADHD, which is not a new thing. That's obviously been something I've had my entire life.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of struggling with it, because I still don't really know an awful lot about it.
I'll tell you what ADHD Ireland calls it. So it's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, neurodevelopment differences affecting 5% of the population roughly, leads to challenges in organisation, focus and self-regulation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I know that's the kind of technical description.
Yeah, that's the technical description. I guess the reality, in reality, it sort of makes itself shown in different ways. I mean, it makes perfect sense. What the one good thing about it is, it's made sense of so much.
I look
back on my life now and I think, I wasn't a completely dysfunctional weirdo that was just terrible at school. It was just the wrong environment for me. And then you can take pride in the fact that, well, I've made it work anyway, because I've, without any guidance, I've found these workarounds that have worked for me and that continue to work for me, and, you know, I pulled it off. And that's great. And now I can manage it going forward. And now I have options going forward. I don't know if I'm going to ever, I don't think I'll take medication for it or anything. I'm coping. I'm enjoying myself. I enjoy my life. If I get distracted, if I make mistakes, I'm all right with that.
You know yourself a bit better.
Anyone else cares either.
Is that fair to say? You know yourself a little
bit
better.
I know myself a little bit better. That's for sure. Yeah.
Text here, PJ, you are amazing. There's great freedom the day we learn not to give a damn.
It's really, there's so much power in just not caring. There really is. There really is. That's all true.
And there's a lot of power in this documentary, PJ Gallagher, Changing My Mind. It's on next Monday.
It's on Monday night at 9:35 on RT1. Yeah.
Monday, 20th of May, just after the news there. The Motorbike Club WhatsApp group.
The Pit Stop Crew. They'll be delighted. Yeah, the Pit Stop Crew.
For the petrol heads, what did you actually arrive in here riding?
Oh, I'm on a Triumph Tiger today. Yeah, yeah. The Pit Stop Crew are all Vespas.
That'll mean more than anything we've said to some people. Yeah. Listen, for people out there who do need help and are affected by anything, rt.ie/support has all the details there. If you don't have access to the internet, the Samaritans do great work as well, non-judgmental. They listen to you. 116123 is the number. 116123. They're actually marking, I think, 10, 15 years of that number as well. PJ Gallagher, thanks a million.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
All right, continue to be well.
I will do. I promise you that.
Back after these.
From the North, text studio, followed by your message to 80889.